You're listening to the Intentional Partnerships Podcast, where we explore what it looks like to truly engage families for the benefit of children. All right. Thanks for joining us today. We're so glad you're here with us. Lindsay and I are talking to Salvador Romero today. And Lindsay, I think this is a great guest, as usual, to have on the podcast.
Yeah, we're very excited to be joined by Salvador here today. And do you just want to start and tell us who you are and how you got involved in family engagement work?
Certainly. Well, first of all, thank you for the invitation. And yes, my name is Sal Romero. I work in Harrisonburg City Public Schools in Virginia. I have been with the city schools for about 12 years. And family and community engagement has been very important to me over the years as I worked as a teacher for about 6 years. I also worked as an administrator, assistant principal to be accurate, at an elementary school for about 5 years as well here in the city schools. And so family engagement has been one of those things that I have always done because I see the great value in it. I also am very involved in the community. I do a lot of community involvement type of work on with various communities that have worked for years. And so that has also led me to really see the impact that we can have when we are finding their place within the educational system.
When we talk about engaging those families, and we know the value of that, what are ways that you guys are providing that access? You know, when we talk about accessibility, and there's that two-part, kind of that two-prong fork, I think, sometimes there is, we really do welcome and want these families to come, and sometimes things aren't in place to make them feel that way, no matter what our, you know, our heart or intentions are. And it sounds like you guys not only have, you know, the heart for families, but what are some of the things that you do to provide that accessibility for them?
So I think, first of all, it really starts at the leadership level. So we have three goals for the district, and we are a 10-school district with about 6,400 students, pre-K through 12. A very diverse system, by the way. You know, we're a minority-majority school system, 40% Hispanic or Latino, and then Arabic is probably about 8%. Kurdish is peaking up to about the 6 to 8% as well. And, you know, total, we have about 54 languages in our city schools, which is very unique and different in this area of the state. Now, when I say it starts at the top, the superintendent and the district leadership team, is that we look at our goals as a division. We have three goals. That's it, three goals. Very important goals. One is equity. And so that equity goal has a number of different strategies that we're going to be able to attain equity for all of our students. And one of those things, it includes families. We say that families will be engaged to support and advocate for their students' achievement. So we know and recognize that families are a big part and can definitely contribute greatly to their kids being successful and to have opportunities such as enrolling in you know, Algebra 1 by 8th grade and being in the STEM Academy and just being able to have those opportunities. So we look at what are the barriers and how do we remove those systematically. We also have two additional goals. One is literacy, very intentionally. How can we partner with the families so that they are supporting their kids' literacy development at home, not only in English, but in their home language? So we are very intentional about that as well. And then our last goal is social-emotional. Families, we know that families need to be engaged through community outreach programs in order for their kids to have the supports they need socially and emotionally. So we look at How can we attain this as a system and then trickle into the schools so that the schools have their own plans of, you know, family engagement? Now, from my office as coordinator of family and community engagement for the district, I look at a very, very specific way of, you know, what are the barriers? For example, when we're talking about Hispanic families or Latino families, you know, what are the barriers that we have identified over the years? Obviously, as we all know, language is a barrier. You know, transportation can be a barrier. The lack of families with the school system is a barrier. And I think one that oftentimes I don't know that I hear enough about, but I believe I have it identified as a barrier, is that we don't see our families as true partners. In very honest terms, we as educators are not taking the opportunity to listen to them and to understand what their needs are, to understand what they bring to the table. What are their knowledge? I mean, their funds of knowledge are very important. We need to understand them better because by that, we can empower them as they will feel more welcomed and more part of the conversation. And then if they're empowered, then they want to be much more engaged or much more willing to be engaged overall. So we look at those barriers. We find intentional ways to remove them So I can give you some examples of the things that we have done specifically to address the accessibility piece, if you would like.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah. So obviously, you know, when I am thinking with the homeschool liaisons who I oversee, and I have about 14 of them throughout the schools, and we talk in our monthly meetings, we look at best practices, obviously in the field, but we also look at our own practices and we look at our own challenges. And one of the things I have come to a conclusion in these conversations is that oftentimes, like we mentioned, our families can come because time is of essence. You know, they get out of work late, they come tired, and their time is very limited. So what I have done over the last year or so is I have looked at some of the larger employers in our area. In this case, there's a company called Cargill, which is in the industry, agriculture industry, but poultry. Fairly large operation. They have close to 1,000 employees, many of which are immigrants, many of which are parents of our students. And so I strategically spoke with them and proposed that I would come and do workshops for their families, for their employees who are our families. And the proposal was basically, I will come, we will provide workshops based, you know, so that the families can be more engaged in their kids' education based on what they need. So we'll do an initial, you know, survey. I'll come and talk with people informally. We'll gather information and gather all the data that we need, and then we'll move forward by creating workshops here at the plant in their native language. And also, it would be wonderful if you as a company could commit to your employees and pay them in order for them to attend our conference or workshops. And so all of that was attained within this year. So I have come to the plant and have done the presentations in Spanish. I also typically will be there regularly, you know, like I haven't been there regularly in the last month because of testing, but obviously I will continue to be back there next month. And what it will happen is that I usually come with my computer. I have our database available. Families can ask questions about their kids' attendance. They can ask questions about their grades. They can ask questions about their, you know, what it looks like for them as they move forward in their high school career. And so, yes, through the workshops, through these informal conversations with the families, and then by connecting them furthermore with people within the schools, then they are becoming more obviously involved in their kids' education, much more supportive and empowered to really be able to get there and ask the right questions. Obviously, that's one way. Another way that I have been able to get more families involved is by looking at other natural gathering places like faith organizations, faith-based organizations. And so the Latino population in Harrisonburg is about 20%, 19.5, you know, nearing the 20%. There is a Catholic church that gathers every Thursday and Sunday. And I happen to be a member of that community, of that church community. And for many years, I approached the preacher, the priest there several months ago and said, you know, proposed that I would come to the church. I would invite families to come and learn more about ways to get engaged in their kids' education. And again, similar process. We do a survey, we do informal conversations, we seek input, and we learn what do families want to know more about. Again, you know, families range from kindergarten to 12th grade, so their needs are different. You know, what they need to know about how to support their kids is going to vary. So we look at finding ways to really be intentional about the information we share with them in a way that it's meaningful and that it is helpful. And so that's going well, and we continue to look at ways of improving that. And then the last opportunity that we've had to engage with our Latino community is through soccer. So we have a local league, which I actually am the founder of that league. There are about 32 teams that compete in that league. So they have over 600 players, and they have about over 1,000 people that come to their games every weekend. So during the winter months, they have an indoor soccer league, which is really great in that, you know, it's a small space where people gather. And so what I did is I began to contact some of the team leaders, some of the team captains who I happen to know over the years and who happen to be soccer players like myself. And so we came up with a workshop in the winter. And again, it was based on what would you like to learn more about on how to become more involved with your students, your child. And so that was another opportunity. So what I do is I continue to look, and we in the city, we continue to look at ways that our families, you know, natural places of gathering and very strategically finding those people within those communities or those organizations who we can make contact with, who then will definitely be advocates of these types of programmings that we can offer free of cost. And we typically bring food, depending on the time of the day, snack or some sort of a meal. So yeah, that's how we have been able to get around getting to more families, learning about our schools and learning, you know, that we value them as individuals and as people, that we want to get to know them better, that we believe they can bring so much to the educational experience of their kids, and that by working together, we will definitely be able to provide their kids a much greater opportunity to be college, career, and life ready.
There's a couple of things there that I really think are really important that you highlighted. So I think when we think about accessibility, what people most often jump to is that physical accessibility. So things like transportation and time. But I really like that you're thinking about this idea of lack of trust and partnership as also barriers to accessibility, and that we're not talking just about physical space. We're talking about accessibility to information about their child, accessibility to knowledge about, you know, how their child learned, how to support their child, and this information that we as professionals sometimes are kind of the keepers of as we think about it in that way. And that we do have a lot more barriers to overcome than just getting people to us, like how do we go out to them or at what time and all of those things that I think it sounds like you guys are doing a really good job of addressing and thinking through these details of accessibility in a much broader sense.
Yes. And, you know, the schools, obviously the credit to a lot of the schools or to all of our schools, because they do look at some of these things and do more in-house types of workshops and opportunities. I was involved with one in particular last year at my former school, actually, where I was an assistant principal for 4 years. So basically, we had a Saturday event. And again, you know, we look at when does it work best for our families? And you know, it's going to be very difficult because, you know, people work different times and sometimes they work weekends, sometimes they work, you know, graveyard work. So it just, you're never going to hit the ideal time and location, but we do our best. And so in this particular workshop or a Saturday workshop, we brought in 3 speakers to do mini workshops. It was based on feedback from the families. You know, one thing they wanted to know was more about, what do I do if, you know, to be safe in our community? You know, a lot of our families are and continue to be fearful of, you know, deportation and, you know, what is going to happen if I get sent back with my kids. And so, you know, that was a big fear. And so we brought in, you know, someone who I know really well from the police department. And we spoke about, you know, what is the police department doing at this point? And how can we definitely be aware that they are on our side, that they are going to be supporting us, that their job is to keep us safe. Families were asking some of the most honest, open questions that I ever thought they would ask because of a fear. And just the way that the sergeant from the police department answered some of those questions gave great relief to them, knowing that, you know, we're a community where we are going to do what it takes for us to treat you with dignity and respect, and we're going to follow the law to the extent that we are, you know, that we should. People also wanted to know, there was a lot of in our area, there were a lot of scams and fraud going on. Families getting calls from con men, you know, pretending to be the IRS or pretending to be immigration, and so a lot of people were asked for money. And so we brought in an expert in that area as well who spoke about it. And then the other thing was, you know, maximizing your time with your children. What are you doing when you are so busy that, you know, you work multiple jobs? And so we brought in someone who spoke about small things that you can do to maximize your time with your kids to improve communication. And so that particular session was really, really good because the families got what they wanted. They received what they needed and they left much better off than when they came in. And obviously, all of that contributes back to how they support their kids when they come to school.
Well, and you talk about that information, you know, historically, that's not what we think we need to talk about when we can get parents in the door or when we get out to them. They all want their children to be successful, but you're talking about things that are between them and that success, but it's not so academic. So you're right. Talking about those fears of, you know, just navigating a new system, but navigating a system they feel like actually may be a threat to them and sometimes is. What are those things that you're hearing from parents? And I would expect it to be anecdotal in the fact that, you know, you could tell me 28% think this, but what are parents telling you when they talk about getting their child, helping their child be successful in school? What are those families, particular immigrant families or non-English speaking families, talking about academically?
So I came to this country as an immigrant as well. I came at 13 and I came with very similar challenges that a lot of our families come with. I came undocumented myself. When families trust a person, trust a school official, and you can ask almost every person that I've talked with and who I have asked this, they want to see their kids be successful. They want their kids to be able to get an education that will allow them to break that cycle of struggling for generations. They want to see them go to college. They want to see them fulfill their dreams. That's why people come to this country. At least want their kids to do and to become. They want them to be happy. They want them to be, you know, contributors of this great society. But obviously their challenges are always, I don't know how to help. I don't speak the language. Right. I barely went to school myself. I don't have the time. I work two jobs. You know, I wouldn't be able to afford supporting them. I can't afford them to go to college. I don't have the ways to support them. And so oftentimes what I'll do is I'll say, all of your concerns are very legit and they're valuable. Let me just tell you, you know, that there are opportunities, that there are ways that your child can fulfill their dreams of going to college one day or getting into the workforce in a career that they would like. Because here are some people, including myself, who have done it. And here are the things you just got to understand that there are people, all of us here in the school system are here because we want to see our kids do well. And it's just a matter of coming to us and asking us how to support you. And so some of those workshops that we put together obviously are about how to support your child as they get ready for high school. What can you do to ensure that your child is on track to graduate from high school and to be college ready? What can you do as a parent with limited resources? I think oftentimes the nature of culturally speaking for a lot of less educated families who come from Latin America, their involvement in school in their native country is different. Right. I mean, I know my parents, you know, my dad never went to school and my mom only went up to the third grade. Their role was to make sure that I went to school and that I was there, basically. You know, the rest of it was up to the educators. You'll hear a lot about our families when they come into the parenting conferences. And, you know, they want to ask a lot about, you know, how is my child doing? How are they behaving in school? Are they getting along with others? Yeah, those things are important for our families. But we are getting to the point here in Harrisonburg where we are really trying to empower our families to be more involved. Right. We are doing workshops where we are teaching our families how to ask the questions that really are not asking. For example, how is my child doing in reading? And if he is or she is not doing well, what is the school doing about it? What are some things that I can do additionally? Being able to challenge, knowing and understanding that their job is to advocate for their kids. So empowering them to be advocates, empowering them to be much more accountable for obviously finding the ways to help their kids at home. And, you know, I always remind our parents, engagement doesn't mean that you come to the school every day. You know, right. You could be a very fully engaged parent, family member without even coming to school on a regular basis.
You talked a little bit there about getting feedback from families and that workshop you threw is based on feedback. Thinking about all of these things that parents want to know or need to know, how do you guys go about getting feedback and integrating that feedback from families into then what you're offering back out?
Through Title I. We have an opportunity to send a survey, at least at the elementary schools, a survey in Title I, and then we have very specific questions, obviously, that come from my department. One question to be particularly specific, what are some opportunities that we are not offering right now that would allow you to be more engaged in your kids' education? And then we provide some examples. When I went to the employer, to the church, to the soccer league, I brought a survey is basically the same survey that I handed out and people filled it out. So those are the main ways that we do that. And then at the end of the year, you know, the schools send feedback surveys as well. Every chance I have to talk with a family, whether it's someone I'm meeting at a school or someone that I know, I will ask. And so a lot of it is anecdotal as well. I take every opportunity to talk with families in any setting that I see them, even if it's just out in the community. That's where I get most of the valuable feedback, is I'm speaking with the families face to face. Many of them who know me and trust me, they're very, very willing to be opened about how things are going. I mean, I've been out of the schools and here at the central office for 2 years. There are families who still call me on my cell phone. There are families who still come and meet here with me. There are families, when I see them at the schools, they'll come to me right away. And if there's something that is going on that they're not happy with or that they have concerns about, they are not shy to let me know, because we do have that relationship and that trust, which is really critical in the work that we do. So that's really important. When I'm speaking about this topic, I always remind people that it's really, really important to understand your Latino community. When we talk about Latino families, we group them in as a category, you know, one group. And we have to recognize that there are so many differences amongst our Latino families. We're similar in some ways, but we are very different in some others. So before being able to put together a proposal or a workshop, you know, the soccer, for example, is big here because we have a large Central American and Mexican population. But if you're in another part of the state or the country where the Hispanic community is predominantly from Caribbean, and then soccer is not going to be the place to go. So you have to know families well. You have to find, you have to learn them. You have to learn more about them as individual cultures and individual groups of people, and recognize that your strategies have to really match their culture and their uniqueness.
Well, and there's 27 Spanishes as well. And so when you try to put out publications, right, we send out all our notices in Spanish, and invariably it goes out and it's like, that's not how we say it. I'm like, well, that's how somebody says it. Okay, we just had it translated by a native speaker. Yeah, the lumping is such an issue. Working in Texas, of course, we have a large population of Mexican immigrants, but you'll go into pockets where there are actually no Mexican immigrants, but the Spanish speakers tend to be Central American. One school was very close to horse farms, so most of the Hispanic parents there, and we had a large group, were Peruvian. And so weekend programs for them were not good because they were either doing polo horses or just, you know, they were doing these high-end horses and were working as trainers and or handlers. And so that school figured out they couldn't do weekends. They had to do things during the week, whereas it would seem very counterintuitive. And so I really appreciate what you've had to say. And I just appreciate not only the work you're doing, but the insight and the fact that you're taking it outside the walls of the school, and that you also recognize that we could do a lot of things, but we've got to get that buy-in from the top down and from the bottom up through our parents, through our administrators as well.
Well, and I think you touch on there too is really important. To family engagement is intentional. It's not just putting on workshops and hoping people show up and being mad when they don't. It's about all of these other strategies. And there's so many moving pieces and parts that make it accessible to families in a way that is bigger than just those one-off workshops.
Our guest today has been Salvador Romero. Sal, we're so glad you joined us, and we appreciate all the insight you provided. And hopefully we can have you back pretty soon to even talk more about family engagement and even, maybe even particularly more about accessibility.
Well, thank you, Mike. Thank you, Lindsay, for the invitation and the opportunity. My hope is that people will find this information useful. It has been for us here in Harrisonburg, and so I look forward to future conversations about family engagement.
All right, Lindsay, you want us to close it off and invite him back, or you want to?
Okay. Yeah, if he wants because to come back, he's welcome.
I think
to.
She's got more than 10 minutes. I think she's got more than 10 minutes of questions. So,
yes, no. If you feel like I would be of value, then I'll be happy to schedule something else down the road.
Yeah, I'm actually worried about losing my co-hosting job presently, is really what I'm worried about. I'm like, oh, Sal's going to get my gig.
And thanks, everyone, for listening. We hope you found this conversation as valuable as we did, and we'll see you next time.
This podcast has been a collaboration between Parents as Teachers National Center and Strong Fathers, Strong Families, LLC. To learn more, visit us at either www.parentsasteachers.org or www.strongfathers.com. You can also find us on Twitter or Facebook.